The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. Today, we are tackling an absolute giant, Sir Isaac Newton. But we're not doing the, you know, the simple version with the apple tree.
No, definitely not. We're going much deeper, using Rob Iliff's biography as our guide to find the real Newton, the one who's been, well, hidden for a very long time.
That's right. The popular myth, it paints Newton as this purely rational, almost secular figure, a sort of prototype for the modern scientist.
And it's just a caricature, really. It's convenient, but it's wrong. Our mission here is to show you the full man, a man whose breakthroughs in, say, physics were completely tangled up with his secret obsession.
Obsessions like alchemy, heretical theology, biblical prophecy.
Exactly. Things we now consider completely separate from science.
And I think what's so fascinating about this for you listening is that it just blows up our modern way of thinking. You know, we have these intellectual silos. Science is here. Religion is over there.
And the occult is way, way over in the corner.
Right. But for Newton, they were all part of the same toolkit, all for understanding one single universe created by God. The big question Iliff makes us ask is, if one of the greatest minds in history saw it this way, what are we missing today by keeping everything so separate?
Well, to even start to answer that, we have to talk about our guide here. Our source is Rob Iliff. He's the professor of history of science at Oxford. And he's arguably the world's foremost expert on Newton.
And his perspective is so unique because of one thing, really. Access.
That's the key. Iliff is the director of the Newton Project, which is this massive undertaking to transcribe and publish all of Newton's private papers.
And you have to understand, for centuries, people were kind of embarrassed by these papers. Biographers would just ignore them or even try to hide them because they didn't fit the image of the rational scientist.
Think about that. We're talking millions of words. He actually wrote more on theology and alchemy than he did on physics. And Iliff has just immersed himself in all of it.
So he's not just giving us another biography. He's giving us a synthesis. He's showing us that Newton used the exact same intense analytical mind to decode a verse in the Bible as he did to formulate the law of gravity.
Okay, so let's unpack the main idea of Iliff's book. It's really an intellectual biography. The goal is to get you to meet the real historical Newton. And to get his science, you have to first get his worldview. You just can't separate the physicist from the theologian.
It seems like he was a transitional figure then, sort of caught between two worlds.
Very much so. He had one foot in the Renaissance idea of ancient wisdom, this Prisca Sapientia, and the other foot stepping into the Enlightenment with its mathematical physics.
And his idea of God wasn't the clockmaker God who just winds up the universe and leaves.
But not at all. For Newton, God was an active, ever-present creator, and his designs could be figured out by studying two books.
The Book of Nature and the Book of Scripture.
Precisely. For Newton, they were written by the same author, so there couldn't be any contradiction. His whole life was this unified search for certainty, and the book takes us on that journey from his childhood to the Principia, the bitter rivalries, and of course, that hidden intellectual life.
Let's dive into where it all began, that amazing period of time. The Annus Mirabilis, the wonder year.
Yes. 1665 to 1666. The Great Plague had shut down Cambridge, so Newton, still a young man, goes back to his family home in Woolsthorpe. And in that isolation, I mean, the results were just staggering.
An explosion of creativity is maybe an understatement. He basically laid the groundwork for three different revolutions in science in about 18 months.
It's incredible. So first up, there's the method of fluxions.
Which sounds very technical.
It is, but it's fundamental. He invented a new kind of math to calculate things that are constantly changing.
What we call calculus today.
Exactly. It's the language you need to describe a planet moving or an object accelerating. He figured this out quietly on his own, and that's what would eventually lead to that huge, ugly fight with Leibniz over who invented it first.
Okay, so that's one. What's the second breakthrough?
Optics. Ah. The famous experiment with the prism. He splits white light into a rainbow, but then, and this is the crucial part, he takes a single one of those colors, say red, and passes it through a second prism.
And it doesn't change. It just stays red.
It stays red.
Yeah.
And why is that so important?
Yeah.
Because everyone since Aristotle believed white light was pure and the prism just sort of stained it. Mm-hmm. Newton proved, no, white light is a mixture. The second prism was the killer evidence. It was just undeniable.
And number three, of course, is universal gravitation. This is the Apple story.
Right. But the real genius wasn't just seeing an apple fall. It was asking, is the force pulling that apple down the same force that's holding the moon in orbit up there?
Unifying the Earth and the heavens.
He started doing the math.
And he began to figure out that the force gets weaker with the square of the distance, the inverse square law. It was the beginning of everything.
And all of that work eventually leads to the Principia Mathematica in 1687. What makes that book maybe the most important science book ever written?
Because it just, it laid out the architecture of the cosmos, the three laws of motion, the law of universal gravitation. It showed that the same rules governed a cannonball, the tides, and the paths of comets. It was this unified, predictive model of the universe.
And in it, he makes that famous statement, hypotheses non fingo.
I frame no hypotheses.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is pure Newton. When people asked him, okay, but what is gravity? How does it work across empty space?
Yeah.
He just refused to guess.
So he just said, I'm only going to describe its effects mathematically. I'm not going to speculate on the cause.
Right. It was a methodological line in the sand. But
yeah.
That's where his secret life comes in. Because in public, he wouldn't speculate. But in private, he thought the cause was God's direct action, and he spent his life looking for other hidden forces through alchemy.
Okay, let's go there. Let's pull back the curtain on the work that actually took up most of his time. This is what Elif's book really illuminates.
You have to start with his theology. Newton was secretly a radical heretic. He was an Arian, an anti-Trinitarian.
So for anyone listening, that means he did not believe that Jesus was equal to God the Father.
Correct. He thought the Holy Trinity was a corruption. A lie that was inserted into the Bible in the 4th century.
And this wasn't just some passing thought.
No. He spent decades, applying intense textual analysis to ancient manuscripts to prove this. If this ever became public, he would have lost everything. His job, his reputation, everything. He was living a complete lie in public.
And that same obsessive energy went into his alchemy.
Uh-huh. And again, this wasn't about trying to get rich by making gold. For him, it was a spiritual quest. He was looking for that Prisca Sapientia, the ancient wisdom. He believed there was a kind of vegetable spirit or an active principle that made matter alive, and he ran thousands of experiments trying to find it.
So that's the missing piece. He's looking in alchemy for the mechanism behind the forces he described in his physics.
That's the link. He's trying to figure out how gravity can act at a distance. And that alchemical work directly feeds into the big questions he asks later in his book, Optics. The man who built the clockwork universe also believed in hidden spiritual forces. It's an amazing contradiction.
And that contradiction gets even more intense when he leaves academia and enters public life. 1696, he becomes warden of the Royal Mint.
And this wasn't some quiet desk job. He took it incredibly seriously. He oversaw the massive project to reform England's currency. But he also became a detective.
A detective.
Oh, yeah. He went undercover into London's criminal underworld to hunt down counterfeiters. He was meticulous, he was relentless, and he sent more than a few of them, like the famous William Chaloner, to the gallows. He was terrifying.
And he brought that same ruthlessness to his role as president of the Royal Society.
He ruled it like a dictator. He used his power to absolutely crush anyone he saw as a rival, like Robert Hooke or Leibniz in the calculus dispute. He basically commissioned a report that declared Leibniz a plagiarist. The man was brilliant, but he was not nice.
Which brings us to a huge theme from Elif's work, Newton the man versus Newton the myth.
Right. The myth is the wise, gentle genius. The man was solitary, secretive, obsessive, and just merciless when he felt he'd been wronged.
You know, that's such a powerful lesson. It makes you look at any great public figure differently. The genius and the flaws, they're not separate things. Maybe the genius is even fueled by those darker, obsessive parts of the personality.
I think that's right. And it connects to the other big theme here, God as an active governor. For Newton, gravity wasn't just a property of matter. It was a power that God was constantly impressing upon matter.
So if God took a coffee break, the whole system would just fly apart.
That's basically it. God's continuous action was necessary to keep the cosmos in order. You can't really understand his physics without understanding that deep theological foundation.
Since he was such a master with words, let's touch on a couple of those famous quotes.
Okay, let's start with the one that sounds so humble. If I have seen further, it is by standing on the shoulders of giants.
It sounds wonderful, right? Yeah. He's giving credit to Kepler, Galileo.
But he wrote it in a letter to his rival, Robert Hooke, who was a very short man, possibly with a hunchback. So many scholars now think it was actually a very subtle, very cruel insult. Humility as a weapon.
Wow. Okay, what about the one we already mentioned? Hypotheses non fingo.
I frame no hypotheses. I think the takeaway there is just his commitment to rigor. If you can't prove it with math and observation, then you have no business claiming it as science. Don't speculate.
And finally, the one that really sums up his entire life's project.
Yeah, the paraphrased idea is, the universe and the Bible are two books written by the same divine author. My work is to learn to read them both correctly.
That's it, right there. That's the whole man. His life was one big code-breaking project.
I think this all leads to some surprisingly practical takeaways for us today. Let's start with the lesson from that wonder year. I'd call it the power of deep work.
His breakthroughs didn't happen in 5-minute bursts between meetings. They happened because he had months of uninterrupted, solitary focus.
And the tip for us is, you know, we have to consciously create that space, turn off the phone, close the email, and really allow your brain to chew on a complex problem for an extended period. That's where original thought comes from.
Okay, application number two, questioning foundational assumptions. Newton's genius was in questioning things everyone else just took for granted, like white light being pure.
Right, it's what we might call first principles thinking today. Don't just accept the way things are done, break a problem down to its most basic truths and build up from there. You might find that the foundation everyone is standing on is actually sand.
And one more, which is a bit surprising from his later career, the value of methodical administration.
Yeah, his work at the Mint shows that being a genius doesn't mean you're a disorganized dreamer. He was an incredibly effective, if ruthless, manager.
Mm.
It shows that taking brilliant ideas and actually making them work in the real world requires that kind of practical organizational skill.
So as we wrap up, what's the one thing from Iliff's portrait of Newton that really sticks with you?
For me, it's just the sheer tension he must have lived with. The architect of our rational universe was, in private, a radical heretic obsessed with ancient magic. The force of will it must have taken to keep those two worlds separate for his entire adult life. It's almost as mind-boggling as the Principia itself.
I agree. My final thought is that we should really stop trying to make Newton into a modern scientist. He wasn't. He was maybe the last great natural philosopher. His world was so much richer, so much weirder, and so much more integrated than ours. His whole life was one grand obsessive quest for order, whether it was in the heavens, in scripture, or on the streets of London. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.